This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Dr. Stanley I. Stuber. Tonight's subject, what is the Second Vatican Council? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Tonight on Night Call, we begin a week-long look at the Second Vatican Council. Standing by in New York City is Dr. Stanley I. Stuber, director of the Association Press and well-known Christian author. Dr. Stuber was a Protestant guest observer at the Second Vatican Council. If you'd like to ask a question of Dr. Stuber or make a comment on tonight's topic, what is the Second Vatican Council, give us a call here at Night Call. Our Night Call operators are on duty. Our Night Call lines are now open, and you may call us by dialing area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Dr. Stuber, how did you happen to attend the council, and what was your status there?
Well, this is a basic question, of course, because I was invited on a personal, individual basis by Cardinal Bear. That's spelled B-E-A, but it's pronounced Bear. And he is the president of the Secretariat for the Promotion of Christian Unity. And I think it's very largely because of my interest in church unity. I'd written several articles, done a lot of speaking on it, and written two books on it.
Well, now, what do you feel was accomplished by the council, Doctor?
Well, I feel there's a great deal accomplished by it. Perhaps from our point of view, a new atmosphere was created, of course, begun by Pope John and then carried on by Pope Paul. But there are many things that concern us as Protestants, I think. We feel that the new atmosphere, which we can talk freely to each other, and some of the matters such as religious freedom and the new attitude toward non-Christians, and some of the, even the new decree on ecumenism, as they say at the Council in Europe, ecumenical relations, that is, the relations between the churches. These are some of the things. Now, I can give some more later if you want to.
Did you find that you had total freedom to question?
Yes. We were given all of the privileges of the council. We had what is one magazine called the best seat in the house, in a special box right up front with the presidents. We were given the documents. We heard the debates. And we were allowed not the privilege of the floor, but through conferences to send in questions and to raise points concerning the various decrees.
Now, you mentioned that you were a guest. Did this mean that the Roman Catholic Church picked up your expenses?
I was a guest in that I had a little different status from observers. I was there on a personal, individual basis, and those from the various Protestant denominations which accepted the invitation were there as delegates, or delegated observers, as they were called. And although the status I had was exactly the same as far as the arrangement was concerned, it was on an individual basis, so I had no responsibility back to any body here. Now, the Vatican did offer to pay my expenses, but I declined because I felt that perhaps I'd be a little freer to say things I wanted to as observer on that basis.
Well, now, basically, what is a Vatican Council?
Well, the Vatican Council is a official council of the Church with supreme power, along with the Pope, and it is the legislative body of the Church. It determines, agrees upon the status of such things as the nature of the church for the first time in this council, and then the matter of such as religious liberty, and anything that, the idea was of this council to bring the church up into the modern world. And this council differed from any other council in that it was not against anything or against any person. It was for various items.
Well, how often do they hold the council?
Well, it's varied through the centuries, of course. The last one, the First Vatican Council, was held over 90 years ago. So they're not held very often.
Well, now, this term, the Second Vatican Council,
yes.
Actually, didn't Pope John start this Vatican Council?
Yes.
Back in 62, wasn't it?
Yes. You remember that Pope John had this, a revelation, I suppose you'd call it, as far as he's concerned, that he should do this. And a bishop came to him about that time in his study and asked him why he'd called the council. And he took him over to the window of the study and opened it up, and the breeze began to come in, and he said, this is why I called the council, to let some fresh air into the church. And because that's exactly what he did, a more formal way, but he was to let fresh air open the doors and windows of the church and bring it up to date.
In other words, he felt that the Catholic Church was behind the times, is that it?
Yes, I think that's the general conclusion, both of, especially those within the Roman Catholic Church. The theologians certainly felt that way, a lot of them. And a lot of the lay people felt that way, and certainly John did.
Well, now, in what areas did John feel that his church was behind the times, as it were?
Well, I think in the area of pastoral relations and regard to relationships to other denominations and religions, the whole matter of the laity in regard to the liturgy, the vernacular, these are some of the areas that he felt should be worked upon and for the benefit of the church.
Well, now, would you say that the Second Vatican Council has accomplished John's aims?
In part, yes. Not wholly, but in part. For example, many first things were accomplished there. These Protestant observers were there. They even had lay Roman Catholics. They call them auditors, who listened in on the council. That was something new.
Now, when we talk about lay, we mean, of course, people that are not professional
churchmen. Yes, that's true. Yeah. And then, of course, they had what they call the Constitution on the Church, in which bishops were made to have divine authority along with the Pope, what is called collegiality. That was a very important matter. The decree on the liturgy, which has transformed the liturgy all around the world, giving it a greater emphasis upon the sermon, upon singing hymns, even Protestant hymns, some of Luther's hymns. These are some of the things that have really affected the church a great deal.
Well, now, the Second Vatican Council, is this, when they come upon a decision, is it, do they come to it via the vote, or does the Pope have the final say?
Well, they come to it through a process of votes, really. They begin to vote whether they should even accept the document for discussion. And then many times the process is to break it down into parts and discuss a part and a vote upon that part. And then they proceed to vote on it as a whole. It's rather a long process and a rather confusing one sometimes, because they may be debating one decree and voting on another at the same time during the session.
Well, is politics played? Politics, say, between those that are liberal in the church and those that are conservative or traditional?
Well, I know you'd call it politics, but in essence, I suppose the positions of the various prelates differ. It's kind of hard to group them, because they don't vote the same on every issue. That is, a liberal bishop may vote differently on the different decrees of the council. But There has been, in a general sense, these major divisions, one liberal and the other conservative.
Our guest tonight, Dr. Stanley I. Stuber. Our topic, what is the Second Vatican Council? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday, I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him?
It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be.
Preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our guest tonight is Dr. Stanley I. Stuber. Our topic, what is the Second Vatican Council? And Dr. Stuber was a Protestant guest observer at the Second Vatican Council. Now, if you have a question on the Second Vatican Council or a question on the that you'd like to direct toward Dr. Stuber, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, remember, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our Night Call number here is area code 313-846-6601. And our lines are now open, and our operators are on duty, so we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Dr. Stuber, what is the Curia?
The Curia is the administrative arm of the Vatican. It's located, of course, in Rome, in the Vatican. It takes care of the day-by-day chores, the administration of the under the direction of the Pope. It's made up very largely of conservative bishops, and it has come, of course, under severe criticism during the past few years.
Well, now, would this be equivalent to our federal government in the sense of the bureaucracy?
It would be more like the cabinet members of the government.
Now, basically, the people in the Curia are of Italian descent.
Very largely, yes.
Why is this?
Well, because I'm not quite sure. I think many times it's the will of the Pope and the tradition. They, of course, come there to study and sometimes prepare for the Curia in various organizations. But there is a tradition along this line, and it's been followed.
Well, now, what actions of the council do you feel have really affected the Roman Catholic Church as we know it here in America?
Well, of course, I feel that the liturgy has been changed. But they adopted what they call the Constitution on the Liturgy.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, it means really a revision of the worship service of the Church. And they have made it much more, we would call, perhaps liberal in interpretation, and they've put it in the native language tongue vernacular, English in our case, so that the people can participate with understanding a little bit more, and they don't have to use a missal all the time or have interpretation of the service, and they can respond. And, of course, the other rather revolutionary thing has happened. The altar has been turned around, reversed, so that the priests face the congregation. And then there's introduced some singing, even once in a while, Protestant hymns. So in this respect, the service has, well, in some think that become a little more Protestant in its nature.
What about this religious liberty issue that we've been reading about in the papers?
Well, that's a major issue, one that I've been following for many years, and I was there when the religious liberty was voted upon. We were in the box, and our interpreter asked us to come down a little nearer the altar where we could see the whole body, and when they voted on to stop the debate, just about the whole body rose. It's just about unanimous to stop debate on it. And then a few minutes later, when they actually voted on it, the vote was 1,997 to 224, so there's not too much opposition to it.
Well, now, what is meant by religious freedom?
Freedom of conscience. As far as the civil government's concerned, you have to keep in mind that this is limited. It does not refer to freedom to choose in regard to religion. That is, as I understand it, the member of the Roman Catholic Church is not free to pick and choose among the doctrines of the church. But it does affect religious liberty in such areas as Spain, Italy, Colombia, South America. And personally, I feel it's a great achievement, although somebody has made the smart remark that this brings the Roman Catholic Church up to Roger Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, it is a matter of catching up, but I think it's a little more than that, because it'll mean that, as I know, because I've had contacts with the members of the Spanish government, that they have a law all prepared on religious freedom, which they will put before their government, Cortes, and vote upon. I think there's a good chance for it to go through. This will mean a great deal to non-Catholics in Spain.
Well, what's the present situation for non-Catholics in Spain or Colombia, South America?
Well, they're treated with some tolerance, but they're treated as second-rate citizens. They have many, there are many things that they cannot do. For example, in Spain, they are not allowed to have a bulletin board on the outside of the church, except I think there's just one exception. An English-speaking church in Madrid has that, but it's within a wall, a walled area. And the matter of marriage and burials and many other things, they are not as free legally as Spanish citizens or Catholics.
As I understand it, the first declaration on religious freedom, or the first draft, was much more liberal than the one that was finally passed. Was this your observation?
Well, they were different. The first draft had many phrases in it, and which were not altogether acceptable to Protestants, and World Council of Churches officials and others checked on those, and from my point of view, the first and second draft, and this current one, which was adopted, went through a process of development. Even now, I feel that there are some flaws in the present document.
What are those flaws, Doctor?
Well, I would think that they have a statement in there referring to the one and only true church. They also restricted and do not mention anything about separation of church and state. They also indicate that there is a perfect right to have an established religion in a state. Now, some of these things create real issues as far as we're concerned here in the USA.
Well, did they come to grips with this idea at all about the doctrine that the Roman Catholic faith is the only true faith?
Well, they just take it for granted it was has been repeated many, many times in the council and by Pope Paul. And then in a press conference, where the U.S. Bishop's press conference one afternoon, Father John Kirtley Murray, one of the chief theologians and perhaps the major writer of the Decree on Religious Liberty, was asked this question about why they had that emphasis related to the Decree on Religious Liberty. And he said that it was a doctrine of the Church, that the Roman Catholic Church is the one and only true Church, that it always has been, it is now, and will have to remain that way. It cannot be changed. And of course, this we can't accept that, because if we accept that, then the matter of union, it makes it very difficult.
Well, then, do you think that the churches will ever really have union if the Catholic Church maintains a stance?
Yes, this is the moot question. If you mean Christian unity in friendly spirit, in cooperation, in working together for great principles such as world peace, world relief, I would say yes, we can have that. We're much closer together because of the Second Vatican Council. But if you mean organic church union, that is, of bringing all of the denominations together under one administration, perhaps under the Pope, then some of us just cannot see that basis at all. On the other hand, there is a Father Hans King of the Roman Catholic Church, one of their foremost theologians, who says that if we both go back through tradition to the New Testament, to Christ, and honestly follow him, then someday we may have a totally different kind of church, and we may come very close together.
Do you think that Catholics and non-Catholics alike, laymen, really would like this, that this is their hope, to have a truly unified church?
Well, there's a great difference of opinion at this point. I think that in general, people say that they favor church union. Many times I don't think they know what they're talking about when they say that, because even the term ecumenical is used differently. I think the Roman Catholic Church, for example, uses ecumenical, especially in regard to the Second Vatican Council, referring to themselves on a worldwide basis. Worldwide, ecumenical means worldwide to them. But from a Protestant point of view, when you speak of the ecumenical movement, it means much more than that. It means not only a worldwide movement, but it means mutual cooperation and working out things theologically and religiously together on a much higher level. And that's a very difficult matter. So I don't think we're quite together yet, and we have to do a lot of more talking and thinking about it.
Do you think that had Pope John lived, that the second session of the Second Vatican Council might have had a different tenor?
Well, I don't know. It's this is an if question, of course, and,
right.
And nobody knows. I think that Pope Paul has been very sincere in trying to carry out the directives and will of Pope John. Of course, he is built a little differently, not only physically, but mentally. And whereas Pope Paul was genial and very friendly and down-to-earth, Pope Paul is more of an intellectual. He has to think through things very carefully before he makes a decision, and sometimes the decisions are therefore delayed. And there is a feeling that Pope Paul is not moving quite as fast as Pope John did. So there's this great difference, and but things are being accomplished slowly, although there are some things that still bother us a little bit.
Our guest tonight, Dr. Stanley I. Stuber. Our topic, what is the Second Vatican Council? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where you get the idea you can make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our topic tonight on Night Call, what is the Second Vatican Council? Our guest is Dr. Stanley I. Stuber. Dr. Stuber is director of the Association Press and a well-known Christian author, and he also was a Protestant guest observer at the Second Vatican Council. So if you have a question on the Second Vatican Council, or you'd like to make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. And our Night Call operators are on duty, our lines are open, and we invite your comments here on Night Call. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Now please make that call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Doctor, what was the deicide issue at the Vatican Council?
Well, Russ, the deicide issue concerned the matter of, it's a technical term meaning killing God, and it relates to the matter of the crucifixion of Christ.
And that, who stands accused of that now?
Well, in the past, the Jews as a whole have been accused of deicide, that is, the killing of God, because some Jews, as very evident by reading the New Testament, were involved in the crucifixion. And on that basis, people down through the centuries have condemned the whole Jewish people on the spot for the killing of God. And therefore, there's been a great deal of prejudice and hatred against the Jews as a whole. Now, the religious liberty document in the second draft had the word deicide in it, that the Jews were not guilty of deicide. But in the present document, the document just adopted last week, this word was deleted. And although the matter of not being guilty of killing God is still there expressed in other language, the word itself is not there. So many people, and I believe some of the Jews, feel that it has been weakened as a result of that deletion.
Doctor, I have a caller in Indianapolis, Indiana. A listener on WFBM, Mrs. Mary Holman. Good evening, Mary. You're on Night Call.
Thank you. I'd like to make a talk to your guest. I feel this way. I'm a Protestant, but I have many good Catholic friends. And somehow I feel and hope you're just the same, that the Catholic people have come a long way in the last few years. And I think that rather than regarding each other as enemies, we should somehow find a way to work together.
Doctor?
Yes, I heard that with great interest. Mary, I appreciate your position, and I hold a similar position to a very large extent as a Protestant. I believe that the Catholic people have come a great deal. I think this is true not only of the laity, but of the clergy, the hierarchy, and we should cooperate with them to the very limit. I know that those of us who are over there, as observers and guests, feel exactly this way. We must not think of ourselves as opposed to each other, as enemies, certainly. And,
for so many years, you know, you were either one or the other.
Yes, that's right.
But our belief.
Yes.
There is a great deal of it that we all believe in.
Well, I'm afraid there's still some of that feeling left, and in many communities it's still there. It'll take some time for this to come down to the local community, this new relationship.
Well, I didn't mean it that way, but don't you think each individual should take a new look at himself?
Of course, yes, I think so.
Not only on a Protestant side, but the Catholic side.
Yes, what would you...
Someday we're going to all have to walk together, or we're going to all fall.
That's right. Yes, I think that the world situation demands that we, as you say, walk together. And although we cannot believe everything or agree upon every single belief, there are some basic principles such as Christ, and now we have a common Bible together, and so this means a great deal.
All right, now wait a minute. Not all Protestants believe the same thing.
That's very true, and I think that's one of the strengths of our Protestants, yes.
All right, because we believe different things doesn't mean we walk alone.
No, we walk together as Protestants and still don't have common beliefs, and we can do the same thing with our Catholic friends.
Well, I hope many people feel like I think we should appreciate what they are doing.
Well, I think...
Give them a chance, and as I do.
Yeah, I think we do. There was a great expression of appreciation for Pope Paul when he's here in New York to visit and speak before the United Nations. Both Protestant and Catholic, and Jews, I suppose, too.
Mary, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you for your comments. This is Mary Holman from Indianapolis, Indiana, listener on WFBM, and our lines are now open, and we invite you to call us here at Night Call. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Our topic? The Second Vatican Council. Doctor, what did the Vatican Council decide on birth control? Did this issue come up?
Yes, it has come up. It's within the decree on the Church of the Modern World, but it's come up only in a very vague sense because Pope Paul has created a new commission to deal with this matter of birth control. So it's not being debated on the floor, but it is still there as a issue, and it's a big issue. I think the Pope perhaps indicated what the decision might be the other day before the UN. You remember that he indicated that they should be more interested in feeding the world population rather than decreasing it. And I would be very sorry, disappointed if that is true, because I think a great section of the Roman Catholic laity is hoping for some more liberal terms in regard to birth control.
Well, now, there seems to be a lot of discussion within Catholic lay circles about the birth control issue.
That's right.
But what seems to be the stumbling block as far as the hierarchy of the Church is concerned?
Well, I think the word artificial is the key to the whole situation. They would go along with the matter of rhythm as a method, because that would be what they would think is more natural in regard to nature. But when it comes to using artificial means of birth control, then up to this point, they have been absolutely against that. There's a debate, you know, going on whether they will consider the pill artificial or not.
What about the charge that one of the reasons that the Catholic Church does not care to change its position is because of the fact that to change now, after centuries of opposition, would allow some question to creep into the minds of some of the faithful as to the infallibility of the Church?
Well, this is a very interesting point because there already exists many questions in the minds of the laity along this line of authority. A lot of the laity are not too pleased with some of the innovations taking place because they have seemed to reverse some of the former positions, and they're a little confused. I have a verse here before me pointing out the confusion in the minds of some of the people. Now, this may be partly so that they don't want to reverse the position, but I think it's a little deeper than that. I think they feel that it's a basic principle. Although it's not a doctrine or a dogma of the Church, it's one of the principles that they have worked upon on something outside of the real dogma of the Church.
Well, now, did they actually get down to a discussion of this in the Vatican Council, too?
Only in two or three speeches. There's been no real discussion of it yet. As I say, it's out of their hands, really, now. It's in the hands of the Commission, and that Commission is supposed to report back very soon.
Well, now, is this commission part of the Second Vatican Council, or is this a special papal commission?
This is a special papal commission outside. But it will have an effect, of course, on the council procedure.
Do you feel that, ultimately, the Church must come to grips with this situation?
Yes, I do, personally, yes. I think it just has to.
And what do you think will be the outcome, in your personal opinion?
Well, I think they may make some minor modifications, accepting the same principle that they cannot ease up on the matter of artificial birth control. But it would seem to me that there's going to be so much internal pressure in relation to married people in the Catholic Church, what we call the laity, that sooner or later they will just have to make accommodations in regard to birth control, because I think it's very obvious that vast numbers within the Roman Catholic Church is violating the basic principle of the Church.
Dr. Stuber, I have a caller in Anderson, Indiana now, a listener on WFBM, Mr. Frank Curtis. Good evening, Frank. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Okay, then, Russ. My question concerns the Jewish situation.
Yes.
Now, if the Vatican Council votes that the Jewish people are not involved directly or indirectly with the killing of Christ, does that make them any more guilty? Or if they vote that they are guilty, does that make them any less guilty?
Frank, that's a good question. This question we've thought through many times. No, I don't think it makes them any more guilty or less guilty, whichever way they vote. But what it does do is to put them on official record as saying that the Jews, as a people, are not guilty of killing Christ. I think the thing that we must keep in mind here is the official position of the Church, and it has never taken official position until up to this time.
Frank?
You use the term official.
Yes.
I assume then that the Church has stood, the Catholic Church at one time had stood the other way then, huh?
No. Again, they've taken no position on the matter. Individual Catholics and groups of Catholics, like Protestants, have held some of these ideas against the Jews. And I think it was to clear up these spotty areas within the Church and the thinking of Church membership that this was done. And it also gives the Church a springboard to be against prejudice and hatred in regard to local congregations of people that might have some of this remaining in their hearts.
Frank, I want to thank you for calling Night Call, sir.
Possibly ask one more question.
Frank, it's time to take our break. If you'll hang on until our break, then I'll be glad to let you ask another question.
Okay.
Our guest tonight is Dr. Stanley I. Stuber. Our topic, what is the Second Vatican Council? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America, busy America, busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with the you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him?
It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb. Hello again, Night People. Our guest, Dr. Stanley I. Stuber. And Dr. Stuber was a Protestant guest observer at the Second Vatican Council. Our topic tonight on Night Call, what is the Second Vatican Council? If you have a question that you'd like to ask about the Vatican Council, or a comment that you'd like to make, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us. All you have to do is pick up the old telephone and dial area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call us from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are open and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Dr. Stuber, we have a guest still on the line, a caller, Mr. Frank Curtis from Anderson, Indiana, and he's listening on WFBM. Frank, you had another question for the doctor.
Yes, to the doctor. How do the Jewish people feel about the killing of Christ in relationship to how we're discussing it in the Catholic Church? And then I'd like to hang up, Russ, if it's possible.
Why, sure, Frank, and thank you for calling Night Call. Mr. Frank Curtis from Anderson, Indiana, a listener on WFBM. Doctor, did you get Frank's question?
Yes, that's Frank has asked two good questions now. Appreciate them very much. His question is, how do the Jewish people feel about this question of deicide and as reflected in this new decree on the non-Christians? Mm-hmm. Well, it would seem to me that they're very sensitive at this point, and rightly so. Because it has meant to them through the years a matter of life and death in some time, as in Germany under Hitler. When you get this matter of hatred going in a community or in a nation, it can be very deadly. Even outside of that, just to be accused of killing Christ, of being opposed to a whole religion, does something to people. It creates barriers and misunderstandings. And of course they like to have those matters cleared up because the Jewish people as a whole have had no connection, of course, with the actual act of killing Christ. And therefore this matter of working out new relationships in terms of brotherhood and cooperation mean a great deal to them. And I think this is the value of this new decree that was adopted last week.
Doctor, have the Protestants ever come up with a document similar?
Oh, yes. We've had several. Just about every denomination has a similar resolution, we would call them. And the National Council, especially the World Council, has dealt with this at some length. And we have taken similar positions, but several years ago. Here again, the Roman Catholic Church is catching up with some of the other religious bodies.
Doctor, I have a caller in Denver, Colorado now, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. Gwen Preston. Good evening, Mrs. Preston. You're on Night Call, ma'am.
Well, thank you. I would like to ask your guest.
Dr. Stuber?
Yes. Whether or not, in the council discussion, the Bible and the Bible teaching enter into it, or whether whether it is church tradition that determines these things, or just what do they base their decisions upon? And the second part, I'll ask him after he's answered that.
All right.
Doctor?
Yes, I heard Mrs. Preston very well, and those are very good points, and something I'm very glad to speak to. At the working service, every single morning, they bring in the open Bible and a little ceremony, and the open Bible serves as the symbol of the council, which is, I think, very significant. And in the various decrees that are debated and adopted, the Bible is used as a basis for the decision. And every document has Bible references. And I'm positive that the Bible is relied upon to a very large extent, not only in framing the document, but in supporting the document. And this would be true, of course, of the Bible teachings as well.
Doctor, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do the Catholics use the same Bible that is used by the Protestants?
They are beginning to, this is a new development, and it came through the Second Vatican Council, that they do approve of using the same text. And in England, and now in the USA, we have the authority of the Roman Catholic Church for the use of the Revised Standard Version of the Bible. Now, this is a so-called Protestant text now being taken over by the Roman Catholic Church with their own footnotes, but the text is exactly the same.
Mrs. Preston, you had another question.
Yes, I did. In the discussion, has anything been brought up about the coming of the end, as prophecy has it, and what part the church will play in this, if any? And I will hang up and listen to this on the radio because it's quite, I don't hear very well.
All right. Thank you for calling Night Call, Mrs. Preston.
All right. Well, thank you.
Good night, Mrs. Gwen Preston from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. Doctor, do you want to answer Gwen's last question there?
Yes, this is a question that I cannot be too definite about because there's been no definite talk about the coming end of the era or the world. I think that you would find that in the minds of theologians, they do discuss this and have it as a principle. I think also you would find some difference among the Roman Catholic theologians as you would find among Protestants. I think the main emphasis now, especially in regard to this decree on the church in the modern world, is to apply Christianity, Christian principles, as much as possible to the developing process of the world, and to try to make it more Christian in our sense, or more religious, so that when the end does come, there will be a better chance of reconciliation with God or with Christ. These are some of the matters in theology, but as far as I know, they have not been discussed yet on the floor of the council.
Doctor, I have a caller in Billings, Montana, A listener on KGHL, Mr. George Schaefer. Good evening, George. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
Thank you very much. I can barely hear you.
We can hear you, George.
What I wanted to ask the doctor earlier in his broadcast mentioned the common bivalve. I think my question was partially answered by the lady who just was on.
Yes.
But I was wondering if he was referring to both the New and the Old Testament as well.
Doctor?
Yes. The New Testament has been adopted so far, but I understand that they are now working on the Old Testament as well. And the council, just a week or so ago, did vote that as far as the scholarship's concerned, that they should work together on a common Bible. Now, from my point of view, this is a great achievement and is something relatively new within the in the church on both sides. And it will mean for, I think, a better understanding. Now, keep in mind that the text may be the same, but some of the interpretations may vary according to the footnotes that they use in the various editions.
But, George?
All right.
Did the doctor answer your question?
He did. I have another one, if I may.
Yes, sir?
He mentioned earlier some place in his program, maybe I didn't understand it correctly, that there was some confusion on the part of Catholic laity, or some doubt to the authority of the church, particularly with the new changes coming in. I'd like to elaborate a little bit on that.
Yes. Yes, I could hear you all right. There is some confusion on the part of the laity in regard, for example, the liturgy, the matter of the changes in the service of worship. Some like the singing and some don't. Some like the nature of the standing and sitting and responses, and perhaps, well, I know that some do not. I've talked with several Roman Catholics at this point, and there is some confusion, but I think on the whole it's being worked out. They're beginning to realize that the change is for the good of the church and for their good individually. Many of them, you can appreciate, got used to the other service, listening and participating in a quiet way. Now they have a more participation, entering into the service in a vocal way. And it means quite a change to them, but in doing so, they become more a part of the service.
George, our time is up on night call, and thank you for calling, sir. Thank you, sir. Mr. George Schaefer from Billings, Montana, a listener on KGHL. And Dr. Stuber, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call.
Well, thank you, Russ, for the invitation.
Tomorrow night on Night Call, we continue our look at the Second Vatican Council with Father David Bowman of the Catholic University of America. Our topic, the work of the Second Vatican Council. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.